sail, only tell you to run.
On my way, on my way.
Nobody say, nobody on.
Every penny on to you. When I come home, was a really, really cool song. It's called Jet Sex by Tonto's Expanding Headband, and this song is being played on a series of Moog synthesizers called Tonto, the original new Timbrel Orchestra. And so this album is called Zero Time, and it came out in 1971. I just ordered it for myself on vinyl, and so that's what you're listening to right now. If you hear any clicks and scratches, the time. Yeah, it's a really cool album. Very happy to have it physically in analog, and it's a very cool piece of history that I'll be writing about in a paper that I've got to get back to work on sooner or later. But yeah, so we've got some more cool stuff coming up, so don't go anywhere.
Muffin Man is seated at the table in the laboratory of the Utility Muffin Research Kitchen. Reaching for an oversized chrome spoon, he gathers an intimate quantity of dried muffin remnants, and brushing his scapular aside, proceeds to dump these inside of his shirt. He turns to us and speaks.
Some people like cupcakes better. I, for one, care less for them.
Arrogantly twisting the sterile canvas snoot of a fully charged icing anointment utensil, he puts forth a quarter-ounce green rosette. Let's try that again. He puts forth a quarter-ounce green rosette near the summit of a dense but radiant muffin of his own design.
Later, he says,
Some people, like cupcakes exclusively, while myself, I say, there is naught, nor ought there be, nothing so exalted on the face of God's gray earth as that prince of foods,
the muffin.
Girl, you thought it was a man, but it was a muffin. He hung around till you found that it didn't know nothing. Girl, you thought it was a man, but it only was a puffin. No cries was heard in the night as a result of him stuffing.
Napoleon Murphy Brock on tenor sax and lead vocals, Terry Bozio on drums, Tom Fowler on bass, Denny Wally on slide, George Duke on keyboards, Captain Beefheart on vocals and soprano sax and madness. Thank you very much for coming to the concert tonight. Hope you enjoyed it. Good night, Austin, Texas, wherever you are.
Well, that was a fun little set that we just had. So, after Jet Sex, we had Frank Zappa with Muffin Man, and then the Hollies with Long Cool Woman in a Black Dress. And up last, we had Steve Winwood with Higher Love. And now we're listening to Tonto's Expanding Headband again. This is a song that I like to use in my segues from time to time, so if you're an avid listener of Highly Recommended, you might recognize it. This is my second to last show of the semester. I'm very sad about that, but I'll hopefully be stopping by at least a couple of times over the winter. So, I don't know, keep your ears open, I guess. Over the winter break, that is. And then I will be back next semester. And now, I have a very special treat for you guys. So, the Tufts Electronic Music Ensemble, led by Dr. Paul Lehrman, is performing tomorrow night at the Once Ballroom in Somerville. It's at 8 p.m. You should definitely check it out. I saw them last night and it was an incredible performance featuring a very cool instrument made by a very cool guy. That instrument is the Rhythmicon. And I have a snippet of my interview with Mike Buffington and Gautier, also known as Wally DeBacker. And they're just talking about this instrument, and so I'll let you listen to that. And coming up after that, I'm going to be playing a song that they do in the in that show, that they do a very good electronic, only electronic cover of, and that song is Broken English by Marianne Faithfull. And yeah, so it's very, very cool stuff. And now, without further ado, I will let us get on to that interview.
So, when I met Wally, I told him about my desire to see this one that was in the Smithsonian locked away. I was calling them every year, and they kept saying, try back later. And I tell Wally, and he's like, oh, I was just in Moscow a couple months prior, and I sampled and saw the one there in Moscow. If you really want to do this, why don't you go to Moscow? So after working it out, we figured out how I could get over to Moscow and borrow the instrument for a few days. I actually took it back to my hotel room and took it apart.
The original
1960s, mid-60s Rhythmicon.
I would say that it's brave of them to let you do that.
Yeah, it's the man who owns it is Andrei Smirnov, and he runs the Theremin, Theremin Center for Music in the Music Conservatory in Moscow. So the Theremin community is quite small, and everybody knows each other. So it wasn't the first time I had, you know, conversations with Andrei. So another Theremin friend of mine, who is also Russian, helped me out and kind of asked if Andrei, you know, like, Andrei, he's like, he needs some time with this. Do you think it'll be okay to take it to the hotel? And he's like, yeah, sure. So carefully took it apart, dealing with, you know, 240 volts and making sure not to electrocute myself. But documented everything, and then came back to America and started working on a replica of that. So I was finding parts on eBay, old German turntables and French movie projectors from the early 1900s, and using all of these parts to build a replica as faithful as possible to the one I saw in Moscow. And
so the two instruments that you saw on the table yesterday, one of those is that incredibly faithful reproduction that Mike made first of about a year and a half. As he said, of, you know, diving really deep to try to find matched parts from the same places that Theremin sort of co-opted different materials from. Yeah, German turntable for two different turntables for two different motors. The whole base is this really heavy piece of metal from a French music projector, French movie projector.
And there's nothing useful about the bass except for the fact that it's holding everything down. So I had to sort of cannibalize this not well preserved movie projector, but it was enough to make me feel a little bit bad, like, oh no, like this will never sort of live its life as a movie projector anymore. It's now,
well, we've kept all the other parts, so maybe we'll find some other, you know, original contraption to build out of the leftover parts of other things. But then the second instrument is the one that is going to be heard in the performance today, and Mike, with all the detail and knowledge he developed making that very faithful reproduction of the Moscow Rhythmicon, this instrument we're performing with today is kind of like an updated, more stable, controllable, and more routable instrument. We can take every one of the 16 harmonics out of an individual channel, and so if we wanted to, we could even run the instrument to 16 individual speakers, which we hope one day to do, which would be super exciting to hear it really as a sort of surround experience.
I noticed yesterday during the rehearsal, one of the there's some nice panning going on. That was very exciting.
Yeah, today we have
four speakers, and there we have, you know, 1 through 4, and then 5 through 8, and whatever throughout. So you're going to be getting different sounds in different locations.
We're not sure how we're going to do it on the stage today quite yet. Whether we sort of keep them as a cluster around where Mike is performing,
or really pan them out. I think that might be interesting. We should have you sit in the center and see what it's like to just throw sound around, because there's points where all 16 sounds are being played, and it gets pretty chaotic. So if we can make it even more chaotic by panning it, you know, something that Cal would probably never have imagined being possible, he might appreciate that.
excellent. Well, so when you did start to go about creating this instrument, was there, other than taking it apart, was there any other documentation that you could find?
There's a little bit of info about the 1930s one in America. There was an attempted restoration in 1992 by a guy named Robert York, and back in the 90s, he was there as a volunteer, and he had electrical engineering knowledge, and he did a little bit of testing. So there's a very poorly drawn diagram of how it works, and just typed on a typewriter. And that was all I had for many, many years. Andre had provided some information, and just from looking at photographs, figuring out how it works. But there's no patent documents or anything like that. So it was very much search and discover type approach.
And the principle of the instrument is sort of described, as well as various details of what it's meant to do. You know, it has a key to do this half beat, but those things don't give you any help, you know, obviously as an engineer, do they, Mike?
No. Some of the math was figured out, and I could follow along and sort of say, okay, well, this makes sense. I know it. I know the motor needs to speed at this spin to produce this pitch. So you could kind of make a spreadsheet and figure out your limits and whatnot, but there's some still ambiguities from the 1930s instrument. The 60s Moscow one was a little bit, it only had 15 keys instead of 16, and you think, well, he had enough keys on the keyboard because he was using 17, so it would end nicely on the white keys and not be all jagged on the side. But he could have made the disc slightly larger, and maybe he couldn't, maybe like he had a disc that was that size, and that's it's weird, but there's still a lot of unknowns for both instruments, and so this Rhythmicon is taking what's known for all of that. We call it the Brooklyn Rhythmicon because it's where it was made. So trying to distinguish, because there were 3 Rhythmicon in the world. Now there's 2 originals and 4
recreations.
More or less doubled it. It's pretty impressive. Yeah.
So the Brooklyn Rhythmicon fills in the gaps and also provides other opportunities to explore this thing, because we've got motors that can be extremely well controlled, and we can do things that take it down to 1 beat per minute, or stop one motor altogether, or turn it in a different direction, or it's all computers now to control the heart of it, but it's still analog, which is, I think, a beautiful thing.
And so I'm going to ask maybe one more technical question, and then we'll veer away for a bit at least. So it would seem that even though there are 16 keys, as you were saying,
we are going to veer away a bit and skip ahead in the interview a little bit, to where we get Wally actually describing how it is that the instrument works, how it makes sound, which is very, very interesting. So let's see if I got the right time there. Unfortunately, we just did this interview. Well, we just did this interview yesterday, so I haven't had time to really mix it correctly. So if you've noticed that the audio is like I'm talking on the left speaker and they're talking on the right speaker, it's just how it was recorded. We are planning on releasing this interview in its entirety or abridged in some manner. But we are planning on releasing it probably after winter break. It will be on our WMFO blog. And the Tufts podcast, Tell Me More, will also be releasing their abridged version of this interview probably sometime in January as well. So all of you listening now are getting the first sneak peek for at least a good little while. So I think that I found the spot in the interview that I want to highlight. And I hope the music in the background isn't too distracting. I quite like it, actually. So, yeah. And the instrument that we're talking about is the Rhythmicon. Very, very cool instrument that you will be able to hear tomorrow if you go to the Once Ballroom in Somerville at 8 p.m. If you're a Tufts student, it's free if you have your ID. And if you are not a Tufts student, I think it's $10, maybe $15. Not really sure. You can definitely find that online. You know, I might actually do a PSA before I continue on with the interview, just because I gotta, you know, get it out of the way. So let's talk about seatbelt safety, because that's very important. It can be tough getting through to kids, but it's your job to make sure they're wearing their seatbelts. Go to safercar.gov/kidsbuckleup. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council. So there you have it, kids. Buckle up. And if you're not a kid, make sure that your kids do. Or your friends. Or you're not friends. Just buckle them up. Anywho, back to the interview. Oh, and we've continued on with the album. Just letting it play. Now we're listening to Tama by Tonto's Expanding Headband.
Since, and so that to me makes it really interesting.
And so it's got I noticed one or two knobs and the keys. What do the keys do, and what do the knobs do?
The principle of how it makes sound is really fascinating. You're effectively listening to light. Light is chopped up by two spinning discs, so it has a keyboard, and when you press the buttons on that keyboard, that sends a beam of light through these discs. The discs are spinning and they have holes. So one of the discs is for pitch and one of the discs is for tempo. And holes are made in those discs to provide different pitches and tempos. And as they're spinning, the light is only allowed to pass through, you know, when different holes on those discs align momentarily. So if you were to spin only the pitch disc by itself, then you could get full notes of a harmonic series, you know, full unbroken organ-like notes. But then when you spin the tempo disc as well, the holes in that disc obviously sort of slice those...
Takes chunks of the pitches.
And slices them further.
Because it spins much slower as well. The pitch disc has to spin pretty fast, and there has to be a large number of holes so that you're breaking up the light a fast number of times, a quick succession, so that the frequency of light then equals the frequency of the note that you're listening to.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know, who is it?
I think that's a great summary. The other one that I think we need to explain for listeners is the onduline, which
not the theremin being it.
Or the theremin as well, definitely. I'm trying to figure out how to, because that's probably what theremin is most known for, the theremin.
Yeah.
So how can we set up that question?
Anywho, I can talk about the, it's more interesting if they talk about it. I'll just...
seen or been lucky...
Oh, that's that. They had me ask the question so that they can mix it all together. Let's see.
How that instrument works.
Do.
You can play without touching. Yeah. You guys have come across, if you've come across any instruments, you can play without
touching. So that's the theremin. Let's find out where they talk about the ondioline.
Change people's imagination is because of that. And he decided that it wasn't harmonically rich enough.
Here it is, I think.
To explore biggest, I suppose, discovery.
That sounded funny.
Part of it that you have to sometimes. A guitarist with a very physical and movable instrument, very portable instrument, can sort of put their body into the instrument and sort of physically express some of the things that they're coaxing out of the strings. You can't do any of that on a theremin because all those things have extreme, you know, influences on the sound you're making. So, and having spoken to a few really top-flight thereminists, they really see that unusual fundamental contradiction at the heart of it, that you have to, it's like you have to put any sort of emotional relationship you have with it deep into some part of your brain and then just fix yourself in this very specific static motor space where the tiniest motor movements of fingers and the arm allow emotional sort of or particular expressive results to come about. So it's really fascinating. That's one of the reasons I think the instrument, even though really not many people can play it very well, why it still holds, you know, it's this fascination. It's, it is like magic.
Yeah. And even if you can't play it very well, you can make some pretty cool sounds.
You can. Yeah. Mike mentioned the heterodyning process by which the sound of a theremin is made. Fundamental difference between the theremin and an instrument like the onduline.
And now it gets
is that difference
real
between
technical.
Heterodyning two oscillators together
so
to get a third frequency,
skip
the one that
through.
You hear, clavulines or solo voxes. But it's just, well, they're also inherently mechanical, but the late 30s to the 60s, when there were other instruments, they played very strongly with instruments like the Rhythmicon and the onduline, that they offer musical possibilities and just, I guess, possibilities for human expression that aren't possible in some of the new digital instruments. And
again, the interview was only yesterday.
Make electronic music. So to me, that's important just because it creates a greater richness.
My apologies for not having vetted out what I want to play for you guys.
Of sound, of composing possibilities, and hence of human experience.
I think Wally summed that up beautifully. I think for me personally, my fascination with theremin, it's interesting to get inside his head. But there are people who are attempting to make replica theremins. I made a replica of the 1929 theremin. And I had very limited information at the time. Now I have quite a lot more. I've extensively documented every detail of the cabinet, and with the intent at some point to make that available or to be able to provide.
Let's see, I think I'm going to turn up the music a little bit, scrub through, find some more highlights for you guys. We're listening to Aurora by Tonto's Expanding Headband now. Sorry to speak over Mike for a bit there. So I'm going to scrub through, see what I can find for you guys. Until then, enjoy the ambience. Actually, I did have other stuff that I wanted to play, so I might actually come back to the interview. For the time being, we're going to listen to one of the songs that the Tufts Electronic Music Ensemble will be playing tomorrow. Again, they're playing at the Once Ballroom in Somerville, right here in Somerville. If you're listening to us on the radio, you have no excuse not to go. And it should be a really fun night. It was really, really cool when they played yesterday at Tufts. I'm going to try my best to be there. We'll see how the studying goes. And yeah, so here is Broken English by Marianne Faithfull. That is a band that I very much, very, very, very much hope to have into the studio for an interview sooner rather than later, or maybe even for a live session. I'm in contact with their amazing synth player. They're a Boston-based group using, among other synthesizers, a Hammond organ, and they popped up on my Instagram. Oh, that's, by the way, the name of the song, album, and band for that last one was Space Junk Is Forever. And they're just, yeah, I'm very impressed. It's a sound that, I mean, some of their songs sound a lot more, a lot older than that last one, but they have a very vintage sound that you just don't see a lot, especially with that organ. It's very cool. Anyway, I'd highly recommend checking them out some more. They popped up on my Instagram sponsored, and I was like, oh, that's a good placed ad. I don't know who else would respond as well to that than me. So there's a lot of highlights to that interview that I haven't been able to find. I might be able to pull some of them out for you next week. But I think I might have a themed show, something about, you know, leaving and the holidays and getting to hang out with Georgia. Definitely going to be a bunch of themed songs around that. Yeah, it's 11:54, 3, 2, 1. It's officially 11:55. I'm Mellow Max. You're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. And definitely keep your eyes open for that interview if you're interested, or if you're interested in hearing more and you can't wait for it to go up on the blog, shoot me a message and I'll see what I can do. Or call in 91, that's our radio station. We're 855-915-WMFO, or shoot me an email at md@wmfo.org. Or if you're an artist and you want to be interviewed or do a studio session, anything like that, just gonna plug the music department. We'd love to have you in. And for those of you who are like, Gautier, that sounds familiar. Why do I know that name? There's a pretty high chance that you've heard a song. It's been played 1.2 billion times on YouTube. But here is Somebody That I Used to Know by Gautier.
So happy you could die. I told myself that you were right for me, but felt so lonely in your company. But that was love at an ache I still remember. Still be friends, but I